care of the $15 per month rent for the storage of the property during the entire period. Within a week of Tesla's death, Walter Gorsuch met with his Washington representative, Joseph King, and together with H.B. Richin of the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice, they called in Colonel Parrott of Military Intelligence and Blois Fitzgerald of the U.S. Army, whom they considered a former employee of Tesla's. One key problem discussed was that Tesla was supposed to have been working for and in the pay of the Yugoslav government in exile. Fitzgerald also discussed the supposed Tesla model held in a vault at the Governor Clinton Hotel. It was determined that before Tesla's estate could be released to Kosinovich, a thorough probe of its contents should be undertaken. Professor John O. Trump, director and founder of MIT's High Voltage Research Laboratory and secretary of the Microwave Committee at the National Defense Research Committee, NDRC, of the Office of Scientific Research and Development, was commissioned to go to the warehouse and conduct the investigation of the contents of the 88 odd trunks. They were held in rooms 5J and 5L. Trump set aside 2 days for the task. He was aided in the search by an inventory of the Tesla holdings compiled by Mr. O'Sullivan, one of the guards at Manhattan Storage. Trump was accompanied by 5 individuals, 2 members of the OAP, John Newington from the New York office and Charles Hedetmamy, chief investigator from Washington, and 3 from Naval Intelligence, Willis George, a civilian agent, John Corbett, who served as stenographer, and Edward Palmer, who took photographs and probably microfilm copies. Both Corbett and Palmer were also listed as chief yeomen of the U.S. Marine Reserves. As the only qualified scientist able to comprehend the work, Trump spent little more than half his time actually perusing the wizard's cache. The second day was somewhat cursory in character, Hedetmamy reported reluctantly, since Dr. Trump was confident that nothing valuable would be found. He was entirely convinced that it would be useless to look in the 29-odd trunks which had been stored since 1933. The Trump papers, which included a synopsis of about 12 articles by or about Tesla, began with an opening letter. The professor acknowledged that he and his colleagues investigated the Tesla trunks at Manhattan Storage on January the 26th and 27th, summarizing first that, 1. No investigation of the Tesla trunks held for 10 years in the basement of the Hotel New Yorker was conducted. 2. No scientific notes, descriptions of hitherto unrevealed methods or devices or actual apparatus of scientific value to this country or which would constitute a hazard in unfriendly hands was found. I can therefore see no technical or military reason why further custody of the property should be retained. Nevertheless, Trump removed a file of various written materials which covers typically and fairly completely the ideas which he, Tesla, was concerned with during the later years, and forwarded it, or copies of it, to Mr. Gorsuch of the OAP. Trump concluded in his report that the last 15 years of Tesla's life were primarily of a speculative, philosophical, and somewhat promotional character. On his return to Washington, Trump met with Homer Jones, chief of the Division of Investigation and Research. "Sir," the MIT professor smugly concluded, "upon the basis of my examination, it is my opinion that the Tesla papers contain nothing of value for the war effort, and nothing which would be helpful to the enemy if it fell into enemy hands."
"Are you quite certain in this conclusion, Dr. Trump?"
"I am willing to stake my professional reputation on it." Satisfied, Jones sent the report and Trump's recommendations to Lawrence M.C. Smith, Chief Special War Policies Unit of the War Division of the Department of Justice, and that, for one faction of the government, ended the matter. Trump drew up a report which described a number of articles by the inventor, interviews and scientific treatises. Exhibits D, F, and Q refer to a highly technical and heretofore underground Tesla treatise written in 1937 entitled The New Art of Projecting Concentrated Non-Dispersive Energy Through the Natural Media. This article, in contradiction to Trump's statement, contained explicit information which had never been published describing the actual workings of a particle beam weapon for destroying tanks and planes and for igniting explosives. Novel features included, 1. An open-ended vacuum tube sealed with a gas jet while at the same time permitting and facilitating the exit of the particles. 2. a way to generate many millions of volts for charging minute particles. 3. A method of creating and directing a non-dispersive stream of such particles with a trajectory of many miles. Written virtually as a patent application, the Tesla article presents in clear and straightforward terms the mathematical equations and schematics of his death ray. Aside from the unpublished drawing and mathematical analysis of its capability, it employed 3 most unusual features. The first was its mechanism for creating a non-dispersive beam of particles. "I perfected means for increasing enormously the intensity of the effects, but was baffled in all my efforts to materially reduce dispersion, and became fully convinced that this handicap could only be overcome by conveying the power through the medium of small particles projected at prodigious velocity from the transmitter. Electrostatic repulsion was the only means to this end. Since the cross-section of the carriers might be reduced to almost microscopic dimensions, an immense concentration of energy, irrespective of distance, could be attained." The second feature involved the creation of an open-ended vacuum tube by replacing the walled enclosure or glass window with a gaseous jet of high velocity. And the third outstanding feature was the means for generating large voltages. Having studied the precursors in the Van de Graaff electrostatic generator, a device which Tesla said was all but useless for generating usable amounts of energy, Tesla replaced the circulating cardboard belt that transferred the charge with an ionized stream of air hermetically sealed in a 220-foot-long circular vacuum chamber. Analogous to the way a shock can be created and transferred by rubbing one's shoes along a carpet on a dry day, the new fluid airstream belt achieved the same end, but to a degree many times greater than a belt generator. This charge, which apparently could be as much as 60 million volts, was in turn transferred to the myriad small bulbs at the top of the tower, their round shape and internal structure constructed to augment the accumulation of energy. Atop this domed citadel, which was planned to be over 100 feet in height, was the particle beam weapon. Nestled in a turret as a supergun, the weapon was set up so that tungsten wire could be fed into its high-vacuum firing chamber. There, minute droplets of this metal would be sheared off and repelled out the long barrel at velocities exceeding 400,000 feet per second. The entire apparatus, apparently, was also constructed for non-military purposes, such as for transmitting streams of electric energy to distant places, much like microwave wireless telephone trunk lines do today. Although Trump downplayed the importance of this paper, it is, to the present day, classified top secret by the U.S. military, with copies at the time going to Naval Intelligence, the FBI, the OAP, the NDRC, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, MIT, and most likely, the White House. Amtorg Trading Corporation. Exhibits D, F, and Q state explicitly that Tesla sold the plans for the construction of his particle beam weapon to A. Bartanian, a Soviet agent of the Amtorg Trading Corporation. These exhibits also specify that Tesla offered the device to the U.S. military, Great Britain, and Yugoslavia. Surprisingly, the FBI did not exploit this blatant Soviet connection, even though this was just the kind of thing that J. Edgar Hoover thrived on. One possible reason was that the Soviet Union was an ally at that time. Furthermore, a number of major corporations, such as Bethlehem Steel, RCA, and Westinghouse, were selling equipment to the Soviets via Amtorg, a company that did over $1 billion of business in America by the time of World War II. FDR, for instance, in 1933, approved $4 million in credit to Amtorg to purchase cotton from American suppliers. Amtorg, in return, supplied the country with furs, caviar, oil, and precious metals. Still operating in America today, Amtorg was unable to find any mention of Mr. Tesla in their records. If Tesla really did receive $25,000 from Amtorg in 1935, which the communique with the Soviets implied, why wouldn't he have paid off his debts to the Hotels Pennsylvania and Governor Clinton and retrieved his secret device held as collateral? An amount as large as $25,000 at the height of the Great Depression was worth roughly 20 times that figure today. Yet there is no indication that Tesla obtained great wealth during that period, although he may have received this amount and used it to pay off other debts and purchase other equipment. A few days after viewing the estate, Trump went to the Governor Clinton to view the actual death ray held in their vault. Charles Haydetnamy of the OAP reported that officers of the hotel showed us the handwritten letter in which Tesla stated that he was leaving the equipment as security and that it was worth $10,000. Trump later recalled the incident. Tesla had warned the management that this device was a secret weapon and it would detonate if opened by an unauthorized person. Upon opening the vault, the hotel manager and employees promptly left the scene. The Trump letter went on to describe his reluctance to remove the brown paper covering, and that before summoning his courage, he looked outside and noticed that the day was pleasant. Inside was a handsome wooden chest bound with brass, containing a multi-decade resistance box of the type used for Wheatstone Bridge resistance measurements, a common standard item found in every electric laboratory before the turn of the century. At this point, Haydetnamy concluded, Dr. Trump indicated that he had no further interest in the case. An FBI report written just 2 weeks prior to Trump's visit to the hotel described the manager's assessment of the inventor somewhat differently, and it doesn't appear that they took him as seriously as Trump alleges. Hotel managers report he, Tesla, was very eccentric, if not mentally deranged, during the past 10 years, and it is doubtful if he has created anything of value during that time, although prior to that he probably was a very brilliant inventor. Did Tesla actually build a prototype of the death ray? The inventor appears to have told both Hausler, his pigeon caretaker, and Fitzgerald, the army engineer, that he did build a working model. And in an interview I had with Mrs. Cheeto, whose husband's father and grandfather were both trusted Tesla employees, she recalls that her father-in-law used to recount stories of Tesla bouncing electronic beams off the moon. This is not a death ray, but it certainly supports the hypothesis that the inventor created working models along these lines. The well-known columnist Joseph Alsop, who interviewed Tesla at the Hotel New Yorker and who was one of the first to fully report Tesla's work with particle beam weapons, described an experience Tesla had when experimenting with cathode ray tubes. Sometimes a particle larger than an electron, but still very tiny, would break off from the cathode, pass out of the tube, and hit him. He said he could feel a sharp, stinging pain where it entered his body, and again at the place where it passed out. The particles in the beam of force, i.e., the ammunition, will travel far faster. Other evidence has been reported by Coram and Coram, who assert that this invention was an outcropping of Tesla's work on X-ray machines patented in the mid-1890s. Thus, we can trace the Tesla death ray to at least three earlier inventions: his Tesla coil and work in high-frequency currents from the early 1890s, his work in bombarding targets with Roentgen rays in 1896, and also his 1901 ideas associated with transmitting energy by means of wireless by beaming up an ionizing ray from his magnifying transmitter and using it as a conduit to reach the ionosphere. With this mechanism, Tesla planned not only to circle the globe with information, but also to illuminate shipping lanes over the oceans and control the weather. The Debobular schematic, the Corums write, having studied the plans in Belgrade, was also taken to Alcoa Aluminum, which said that it was ready to supply the materials as soon as Tesla raised the necessary capital. Alcoa, however, was unable to locate any reference to Tesla in their corporate records. At the age of 81, Tesla stated at a luncheon attended by ministers of Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia that he had constructed a number of beam transmission devices, including the death ray, for protecting a country from incoming invasions, and a laser-like machine that could send impulses to the moon and other planets. He also said that he was going to take the death ray to a Geneva conference for world peace. When pressed by the columnists to give a full description, Dr. Tesla said, "But it is not an experiment. I have built, demonstrated, and used it. Only a little time will pass before I can give it to the world." Considering that Tesla had two secret laboratories throughout the 1930s in which no reporter ever set foot, we're left with a mystery Did Tesla really scam the hotel by frightening the management into accepting a bogus invention in lieu of $400 rent? Feeling that the world owed him a place in which to live, perhaps he purposely chose not to pay for his housing. This certainly was a compulsive and self-destructive pattern during the latter quarter of his life. Lesser mortals often bore the brunt of his repressed rage. He was known to be abrasive to maids and office secretaries. Having made it a habit to live on credit, Tesla may have derived great pleasure during those lugubrious nights when he was forced to face his failures in thinking back to the chaps at the Hotel Governor Clinton trembling at the terrible weapon they kept protected in their midst. The conspiracy scenario. Secret agents break into Tesla's New Yorker hotel safe without Kasanovich knowing, remove keys to his Hotel Governor Clinton vault, and steal the death ray prototype, substituting the equipment Trump found a week or two later. This potential incident would have had to have taken place between January the 9th and January the 29th, 1943, the dates of Tesla's death and the end of Trump's investigations. The agents who performed this task, if it occurred, could have been Blois Fitzgerald and Ralph E. Doty. The evidence is as follows. Sava Kazanovich's secretary at this time was Charlotte Muzar. She reports that she saw Tesla during his last days for the purpose of delivering funds that he required, and that she was also present at the opening of the safe after Tesla died. Present were Kenneth Sweezy, Sava Kazanovich, and George Clark. According to her story and official reports, a locksmith was called in to change the combination of the safe and give the new combination to Kazanovich, who was the only one who had it. In the safe, before he locked it again, was a set of keys and the 1917 Edison medal. About 10 years later, when the estate was finally shipped to Belgrade and the safe opened, the Edison medal and the keys were found to be missing. The medal was never recovered, but the keys were found outside the safe in one of the numerous cases of documents. A January 12, 1943 OAP memorandum states that Charles McNamara, assistant manager of the Hotel Governor Clinton, permitted the OAP to seal safety deposit box number 103, which contained the $10,000 machine. Box number 103 is not a specially constructed box, as Fitzgerald said. It is, however, one of the largest boxes of the lower tiers. The day before this, at the Hotel New Yorker, Tesla's bedside safe was opened. Present, according to another OAP memorandum, aside from Sweezy, Clark, and Kazanovich, were two hotel personnel from the New Yorker, Mr. L.O. Doty, credit manager, and Mr. L.A. Fitzgerald, assistant credit manager. It strikes this researcher as a rather odd coincidence that these two individuals carried the same last names as a colonel from military intelligence and the ever-present Blois Fitzgerald. If, in fact, these two supposed credit managers were really government agents, it would have been a fairly easy task for them to retrieve the key or make a copy to box number 103 and swap the device. A further investigation of the FBI files reveals that on October the 17th, 1945, E.E. Conroy from the New York office sent two copies of the Trump report to J. Edgar Hoover and reviewed with him once again the roles played by Fitzgerald, Sparnell, a censored person X, and Kazanovich. Conroy said that X, probably another FBI agent, suspected that Sparnell was definitely pro-Russian in attitude, and that Sparnell was spreading pro-communist propaganda in full-page ads in various newspapers, and yet also suing these newspapers for libel. Conroy also reiterated that Sparnell had ties to Vice President Henry Wallace, so caution was advised. It appears that Sparnell had met Fitzgerald, a friend of X, at an engineering meeting in November 1942. Fitzgerald at the time was an army private at Wright Field, Dayton, Ohio. He was described in the FBI report as a brilliant 20-year-old scientist who spent endless hours with Tesla before his death. Fitzgerald had developed some sort of anti-tank gun. Sparnell tried to form a partnership with Fitzgerald in order to sell this weapon to the Remington Arms Company, but for some reason Sparnell blocked the final sale, and then tried to arrange a more lucrative deal with Iogen's Shipbuilding Company of New Orleans. In November 1943, Iogenes fired Fitzgerald, and a year later the young engineer returned to the army. Today, 1945, Fitzgerald is engaged in a highly secret experimental project at Wright Field. In spite of his rank of private, Fitzgerald is actually director of this research and is working with many top young scientists on perfection of Tesla's death ray, which in Fitzgerald's opinion is the only defense against offensive use by another nation of the atom bomb. Conroy suggested cooperating with Fitzgerald in order to secure legal possession of Tesla's effects. The goal, of course, was to obtain and protect the details of the weapons system, yet also to set up a memorial foundation for the preservation of the inventor's memory. Fitzgerald purportedly also interested Henry Ford in the project. On October the 19th, 1945, Brigadier General L.C. Craigie, Chief Engineering Division Control Equipment Branch, Wright Field, writing at the request of Blois Fitzgerald, David Pratt, Herbert Shoot, and P.E. Hoole, all engineers working at Wright Field, contacted Harvey Ross of the FBI in New York in order to officially request, in the interests of national defense, access to the effects of Dr. Nikola Tesla held in Manhattan Storage Warehouse. Colonel Ralph Doty from Military Intelligence in Washington followed up the inquiry by working as a liaison officer between the War Department, the OAP, and the FBI. Since the FBI had no jurisdiction over the Tesla estate, Fitzgerald, Conroy, and Craigie were referred to the OAP. On September 5, 1945, Lloyd Shawless of the OAP mailed off two copies of the Trump Report to Colonel Holliday of the Equipment Laboratory Propulsions and Accessories Subdivision, who no doubt forwarded them to Fitzgerald. These were the full photostatic copies, not merely the abstracts. 2 years later, Colonel Duffy of Air Material Command, Wright Field, wrote to the OAP that the papers were still being evaluated. By 1950, Kozanovich was still barred from the warehouse. He was now officially the Yugoslavian ambassador to both the United States and the United Nations, and his patience had reached its limit. Kozanovich wanted his uncle's effects in Belgrade, where they would be rightly honored. In March, he went to the warehouse to inform them of the inventor's wishes to send the estate to the Tesla Museum. It was at this time that the ambassador was informed that the FBI had microfilmed the entire contents. He called J. Edgar Hoover to request a copy of the microfilm, but Hoover said that they did not have such a copy. Kozanovich had probably been misinformed. One of the warehouse people may have mistaken the Trump people for the FBI, or another group microfilmed the papers, now held in the Library of Congress, at a different time. Finally, in 1952, arrangements were made, and the entire 80 trunks were shipped to Belgrade. Included were many valuable original papers completely unknown to O'Neill, such as Tesla's 1899 Colorado diary, various photographs, tens of thousands of letters, and most of his inventions, including the remote-controlled boat, wireless fluorescent lamp, motors, turbines, plans for his vertical takeoff flivver plane, and a model of the magnifying transmitter. Tesla's ashes were sent at a later date. Sparnell would be questioned by Joseph McCarthy, and the copies of the death ray papers moved further underground. The probable trail of the secret paper. In 1984, Andrea Pulharic presented Tesla's secret death ray paper to the International Tesla Centennial Symposium held in Colorado Springs. It was published in the proceedings. Pulharic told this author that the original source of the report was Ralph Bergstresser, author of a notable Tesla article published in 1957. Pulharic thought that Bergstresser, along with an associate, who may have been Blois Fitzgerald, was linked to the FBI, and thus obtained the paper in that capacity. In the 1940s, Bergstresser worked for RCA and Marconi's boys. I always believed that Marconi was the inventor of the wireless. Then I found out it was all a lie. Bergstresser, who was about 80 years old when I spoke to him, recalled that Marconi had lived on a ship on the high seas to avoid subpoenas Tesla tried to give him. At the outbreak of World War II, Bergstresser began to work on behalf of the war effort,
when he, Tesler, turned over to me his various papers. I would take and read them and return them to him.
According to one source, Bergstresser was under the command of the new secret organization, the Office of Strategic Services, OSS, later the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, and in that capacity he was analyzing the papers for their military significance. Bergstresser recounted that he had only known Tesler during the last 6 months of his life.
He was skinny, tall, stooped, emaciated, didn't eat right.
In further questioning, he also said that he had known Jack O'Neill and his colleague William Lawrence, author of the 1940 New York Times death ray article which sparked such interest by the FBI and factions of the armed forces, and that he and Bergstresser had attended Tesla's funeral together in 1943. During the conversation, I asked Bergstresser if he had any proof to support his contention that Tesla's papers had been systematically removed from libraries. He said that the conspiracy was massive and extremely complex, going back to J. Pierpont Morgan and his wish to suppress Tesla's wireless power distribution inventions because they threatened to provide cheap or free power for the masses. He was upset that Tesla's entire estate
was hauled away behind the Iron Curtain,
and partially blamed Lawrence, who he said was later found to be a communist. He agreed that Blois Fitzgerald had probably taken the papers to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, but he declined to comment on any relationship to Fitzgerald or to the trail of the secret papers. Puharich had said that the particle beam article had been passed from Bergstresser to Bob Beck of the U.S. Psychotronic Society around 1981, and from there they were passed to him. Influence of the McCarthy period. It was true that by the time the FBI and federal government became actively involved in suppressing Tesla's scientific papers, the inventor had already slipped from the mass consciousness. Nevertheless, an air of secrecy, supported by the taint of ties to a German fifth column or the communists via his Yugoslav heritage, served to submerge even further the inventor's work. This was augmented by the transfer of Tesla's papers to the remote city of Belgrade. Star Wars. Tesla's numerous inventions could be applied in a variety of ways for military purposes. For example, particle beam weapons, worldwide radar, earthquake contrivances, brainwave manipulation. One or more magnifying transmitters could supposedly send destructive impulses through the Earth to any location. Thus, a well-placed jolt of many millions of volts could theoretically destroy the communications network of any major city. Recent discourses on potential future warfare technologies, stemming mainly from war games analyst Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden and parapsychologist Andrea Puharich, MD, suggest that the Soviets had harnessed various Tesla weapons, including apparatus for seismic, weather, and mind control. According to Bearden, the Tesla magnifying transmitter produced a fundamental one-point gravity vector, or electrostatic scalar wave, that disturbs the very fabric of the space-time grid itself, and therefore is not bound by the speed of light. Thus, a theoretical instantaneous Tesla wave, emitted from the magnifying transmitter, could potentially affect the planet's geomagnetic pulse, and thereby be directed to any number of targets on any continent. This research is highly controversial and speculative, and should be read with caution. Nevertheless, in 1977, in its May 2nd issue, Aviation Week published a 7,000-word article on Soviet particle beam weapons. The expose, which shook Washington, was also abstracted in Science. It contained a schematic drawing of a particle beam weapon which bears a remarkable resemblance to Tesla's then-unpublished drawings made 4 decades earlier. Coupled with the realization that the Soviets were well advanced in this area, this is strong evidence in support of the claim that Tesla did in fact sell the schematics of such a device to them in the mid-1930s. Aviation Week also described the use of young geniuses under the age of 29 located at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, who were trying to conceive of a breakthrough in the technology. And also, surprisingly, that the president, Jimmy Carter, was screened from vital technical developments by the bureaucracy of the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency. The source was General